looking inside, does she see me? No, she does not really see me, cause she sees her own reflection. And I'm trying not to notice that she's hitching up her skirt, and while she's straightening her stockings, her hair has gotten wet. The morning as I'm listening to the bells of the cathedral. I am thinking of your voice.
Was Tom's Diner by Suzanne Vega. Now we're listening to The Orbiting Beatnik by Julie Cruz.
On the fence about the COVID vaccines?
I mean, they made it so quick.
I get it. It's an important decision. It may help to know that these vaccines were the most tested in history.
Yeah, but don't the shots give you COVID-19?
No, none of the vaccines contain the live virus, and it's impossible to get it from the vaccine.
And the side effects?
Some people have a strong reaction, but the symptoms are less severe than actually getting COVID-19. Ask questions. Get the facts.
Visit aha.org/vaccine. A message from the American Hospital Association.
My fellow Americans, I would just like to say now, as an expert on the subject, that WRCT Pittsburgh does not blow. Thank you.
So we had some major media news yesterday, many of you emailing me about it, tweeting to me about it, sending me very, very respectful all sorts of messages about it. The story is Chris Wallace leaving Fox News and joining CNN Plus, CNN Plus being a new streaming service from CNN. And this is a really big deal in the political media space because Chris Wallace, as many of you know, was one of what we would call the lone occasional voices of reason on Fox News, which was basically a sea of propaganda. And I've had a number of different thoughts about Chris Wallace's presence on Fox in the past, which there's no better time to talk about than now. But let's first take a look at Chris Wallace making the announcement yesterday on Fox News Sunday.
After 18 years, this is my final Fox News Sunday. It is the last time, and I say this with real sadness, we will meet like this. 18 years ago, the bosses here at Fox promised me they would never interfere with a guest I booked or a question I asked, and they kept that promise. I have been free to report to the best of my ability, to cover the stories I think are important, to hold our country's leaders to account. It's been a great ride. We've covered five presidential elections, interviewed every president since George H.W. Bush, traveled the world sitting down with France's Emmanuel Macron and Russia's Vladimir Putin. And I've gotten to spend Sunday mornings with you. It may sound corny, but I feel we've built a community here. There's a lot you can do on Sunday mornings. The fact you've chosen to spend this hour with us is something I cherish. But after 18 years, I have decided to leave Fox. I want to try something new, to go beyond politics to all the things I'm interested in. I'm ready for a new adventure, and I hope you'll check it out. And so, for the last time, dear friends.
Okay, so he's leaving. He said he has new projects, and then within 2 hours, CNN announced he's going to be joining as an anchor of their new streaming service, CNN Plus, which doesn't exist yet. It's expected to debut early next year. So is this good or is this bad? And for who or whom, depending on your preference? On the one hand, it's been clear for a long time that Chris Wallace's days at Fox were probably numbered if he was going to keep asking just real questions of Republicans when Republicans would be on. And we had all of these different examples of, I don't even remember what senator it was who was talking about the debt. And Chris Wallace pointed out, well, a lot of that debt accrued under Trump, not under Joe Biden. And, you know, this is like in other countries, we would call it basic journalism. It was rare on Fox. And because Chris Wallace was doing it, and he was doing it with Republicans as well as Democrats, it was rare. It stood out. And there was some sense that at some point he might be gone. Now, on the one hand, you could say his mere presence on Fox was a net positive because there were some viewers who were fully accepting all the propaganda. And even if they didn't care that this is what Chris Wallace was doing, they would be exposed to it for a moment and maybe he would change some minds and get some of these mindless Fox viewers to think, hey, here's another perspective. The counterpoint to that is that Chris Wallace did provide Fox News cover in a major way to be able to say, we're fair and balanced. We have news and we have opinion. That's one they've been hiding behind for a very long time. It's like, yes, you have news and opinion. It's blurred, and even the news sounds like opinion. And we have plenty of people holding Republicans accountable, like Chris Wallace. They used to have Shep Smith, although Shep Smith left. And in that sense, it provided cover for Fox News to be marginally more plausible as an actual news channel of sorts with actual journalism being done. And so with Chris Wallace leaving, does it prevent Fox from now having that cover? My bottom line on this is as follows. I think you've got two sides of the scale and they're really both doing work. It's close, right? On the one hand, his presence is good as an alternative to the propaganda. On the other hand, his presence allows Fox to run interference. My expectation is that now Chris Wallace will be replaced with a total partisan hack. People on Twitter were talking about Dana Perino. Dana Perino, who's a Fox anchor now, was George W. Bush's press secretary, right? I mean, give me a break, guys. So he'll probably be replaced with someone much worse. I think that by a small margin, Wallace on Fox was a net positive. He did ask real questions and maybe convince some people. He did allow Fox to say, we have a variety and we have journalism and we have Chris Wallace. I think the benefit of having him there slightly outweighed the very pernicious reality that he was running interference for what was otherwise a complete and total propaganda media outlet. And in particular, if he now gets replaced with Tucker or a Hannity wannabe, not literally Tucker, but a Tucker or Hannity wannabe, I think we are worse off. And so the criticism that he ran interference for a horrible propaganda network is 100% accurate. And I would say by like 5%, him being there was a net benefit. If you disagree with me, I want to hear from you. For a long time, the American right wing has been using their narrow and myopic, cartoonish, outdated view of masculinity and femininity to attack anybody they can on the left, of course. You might remember back in the 2004 presidential election, a big narrative, a big movement was feminized John Kerry. John Kerry was the Democratic presidential nominee in 2004, running against George W. Bush, who was the Republican running for re-election. And the story was Bush is masculine. He clears brush with a chainsaw in Texas. He throws a baseball well. And on the other hand, the storyline from these right-wingers was John Kerry is feminine because he windsurfed, spoke French. Imagine speaking another language now is feminine. And once sort of fumbled a football that was thrown to him. And of course, this in and of itself didn't really fit the facts. The facts were Kerry was the military veteran who served in combat in Vietnam. Bush was able to be barely involved in the military thanks to family connections. By their own standards, Kerry should have been seen as the masculine one, but it didn't matter. The tactic is you feminize the person in the Democratic Party. But okay, that was 2004. We hadn't really seen this tactic during COVID, except for the occasional wearing a mask is gay type of stuff that we've previously covered on the show. They are now really upping the ante on that talking point. Fox News propagandist Tucker Carlson, during an interview with British right-winger Nigel Farage, said that getting COVID, not getting the vaccine, getting COVID, you get sick with COVID, it feminizes you, makes you more like a woman. Let's take a look at the clip.
Leadership quality.
Yes.
We're going to go and climb that hill. And here's why we want to do it. And we invite you, the public, to come with us on that journey.
Amen.
That is leadership. And Boris, just with the best will in the world, doesn't have that. And we've seen more U-turns in policy from the Johnson government than I've seen in any government in my lifetime.
Yes.
And
in a very embarrassing way.
Oh, some of it's been shocking.
So somebody who knows him told me, and I should be interested in getting your take on this, that getting COVID emasculated him. It changed him. It feminized him. It weakened him as a man. Do you think that's...
Well, I think he was very seriously ill.
Oh, for sure he was.
And I think... I mean, one of the things we have learned from COVID is people who are 50, 60, 70, 80 pounds overweight tend to have fared very badly.
Sure.
Now, we don't talk about it
but
much.
The virus itself, this is true, does tend to take away the life force in some people, I notice. I mean, it does feminize people. No one ever says that, but it's true.
I think the virus did affect him, but I think, let's be honest about it, it's the new wife, isn't it? I mean, it's, you know, Carrie Johnson, or as she's now called, Carrie Antoinette, which the historians like.
Now, of course, if this is true, if getting sick from COVID is feminine, all those right-wing radio hosts who denounced the vaccine, didn't get vaccinated, ultimately got COVID and died, that's very, very feminine. By this metric that Tucker Carlson is laying out for us, I actually got hit with this firsthand. I don't know how many of you remember. A few years ago, I fainted on an airplane. I've fainted a few times in my life, just sort of a combination of dehydration, elevation, coffee, alcohol, you know, bad combination of stuff. And when I told the story, some people commented on YouTube, what a sissy. And others said it was a medical event, you know, like it's not feminine or masculine. It's just a medical reality. And that's essentially the same thing that Tucker is doing here. Now, there's one other funny thing about this. These right wingers don't apply this standard to their own. None of them said feminized Herman Cain. What a woman when he got COVID and died. He was a friend of Trump. He was a Republican. A Jordan Peterson has been in and out of all sorts of treatments for what, near 2 years now? I guess he's out now, but he was in for close to a couple of years. Hospitals in Eastern Europe, etc. They never said how feminine of Jordan Peterson. And in fact, he still had his fans and acolytes hanging on his every word. So as usual, it's a silly idea. It's a dumb idea. Disease as feminine. It's being sick as feminine. But they also only apply it when it's convenient to their narrative. I actually do think, maybe some of you would disagree, major progress has been made on some of this stuff. And fortunately, more of the population in the U.S. don't see this bizarre, narrow definition of masculinity as relevant. You know, men hug more now in U.S. culture than before. It's been no big deal in most cultures for a long time. In the U.S., there was more of a, that's gay, man. But that it's diminished to some degree. So I actually think on this particular issue, some progress has been made, but it still persists in many, many places. And as usual, it's the hypocritical application of these standards that's particularly nonsensical. So no real surprise. I genuinely don't think Tucker believes any of this stuff. And you and I, meaning people in the audience, have called in before to talk about, is Tucker for real? Is he pretending? The anti-vax stuff, he's certainly vaccinated, right? I'm sure all his family was vaccinated the first day they became eligible. I don't know, but my instinct is I think Tucker's a terrible person because he's willing to do this stuff, but I'm leaning towards it's all BS. I don't really think he believes more than half of these nonsense talking points that he comes up with. I think it's for the show. I think it's performative. I think it's for ratings, and that's nothing I would ever do. You all know, if I tell you something on this show, it's actually what I believe. Let me know what you think. You can find me on Twitter at @DPacman. Is Tucker for real with these talking points, or are they just performative? Also remember that tomorrow is the last and final David Pacman Show viewer town hall of the year. 6 p.m. Eastern, 3 p.m. Pacific, Tuesday, December 14th. It'll be streaming live on the Pacman Live YouTube channel. And if you want to participate, you can get connected on the David Pacman Show Discord at davidpacman.com/discord. So I very gladly spent a bunch of time this weekend setting up orders for free David Pacman Show t-shirts. We made this offer last week. I said, folks, sirs, ma'ams, children, everybody, the last few months, we've seen a little bit of a decline in David Pacman Show website membership. It's been a tough final few months of the year. We are offering free t-shirts to everybody who signs up for a new membership at the full yearly rate of $60. A bunch of the emails I got were people who just didn't understand. They said, okay, I just got a monthly membership. Where's my t-shirt? Or just people that were confused. But that's okay. That's par for the course in this business. Many of you did go and actually get full price yearly memberships and ask me for the t-shirts, and we are pumping them out. And let's extend the offer for this week as well. You sign up at joinpacman.com at the full yearly price of $60. Full yearly price of $60. You're a new member. Email info@davidpacman.com and we'll get that free t-shirt right out to you. At this point, it isn't clear that anything would actually shock us about the Trump riots, but we have now learned something that is sort of shocking about the attempt to steal the election from Joe Biden by Donald Trump. There was a PowerPoint. They put it in writing. This was happening at the highest levels of the Trump administration. The plan was extensive. The plan was specific and detailed. And they actually implemented certain elements of the plan, of course, not succeeding in actually stealing the election. If it weren't totally predictable, it would be surprising, but it does come as a shock in terms of the attack on democracy that this represented. And 4 years ago, we certainly would not have imagined that they would go this far. We knew there was a memo from a lawyer outlining mechanisms that could be attempted to try to steal the election from Joe Biden. But this became a PowerPoint presentation with suggestions such as declare a state of emergency, put in place a different slate of electors. And all of this is relevant because for so long they denied the rumors that they were thinking of declaring a state of emergency, that it was ever a discussion. So what this all is about is a PowerPoint presentation obtained by the House committee investigating the Trump riots. The PowerPoint is called Election Fraud, Foreign Interference, and Options for January 6th. And these are options for trying to prevent Joe Biden from being certified as the winner, which of course he was. The PowerPoint was turned over to the investigative committee by former Trump Chief of Staff Mark Meadows. It is real and it is spectacular. Here are some slides from it. And of course, all the rumors were true. They denied it all. The things we believe they were planning, they were indeed planning. First slide, called Options for January 6th, lists VP Pence seats Republican electors over the objections of Dems in states where fraud occurred. We knew they were planning this. Just Mike Pence says, because there is fraud in Arizona, instead of seating the Democratic electors, we have an alternate slate of Republican electors. Insane. Insane. Second option, VP Pence rejects electors from states where fraud occurred, causing the election to be decided by the remaining electoral vote. So the idea there is, if you just take off the table some of the electors, instead of needing 270, now maybe you only need 230 or 210 or whatever. The idea is you take enough states off the table that Trump's actual electors that he did win are more than 50%. That was the second option. Third option, VP Pence delays decision to allow for vetting and counting of legal paper ballots. The idea being, well, they would say a ton of these are not legal and throw them out. That was a slide for the coup, like a book report, but for a coup. Another slide called Recommendations actually says on it, declare a national security emergency, claim foreign interference and control of voting systems. Remember, they denied that there was even a vulnerability to foreign actors back in 2016. Now, all of a sudden, they want to use it. Here it was, let's use it ourselves to steal the election. And then third recommendation, declare electronic voting in all states invalid. They denied they were thinking about this stuff, and it is on the PowerPoint. In another slide called Summary of Domestic Voter Fraud, they list all of the things that they eventually did trot out. Now, this stuff they tried, okay? Double voters, people voted twice, dead voters, that one we spent a lot of time debunking, non-citizen voters, they can't even register to vote, fake ballots, like just a ballot you make at home, I guess. They list 8 states. They are exactly the states that they talked about: Michigan, Pennsylvania, Wisconsin, Minnesota, Georgia, Nevada, Arizona, New Mexico. They did all of it. This was the game plan. They tried it. Fortunately, they didn't get away with it. Now, they didn't ultimately try declaring the national security emergency, or maybe Trump did and someone stopped him. We don't know yet. We just have to wait. So there's a few takeaways here. Confirmed for the 10th time, they were lying all along about what they were planning, what they were thinking of, what they would be willing to do. It was lie after lie after lie. Confirmation, not surprising. Second, we were right about this being very serious and probably something they're going to try again. Now, we all had a good old time laughing at the wacky stuff, right? Rudy Giuliani's face melting, the hair dye, Sidney Powell visibly perplexed by her own arguments, you know. Okay, I get it. Trump, the big baby, still won't admit he lost all of it. But this is not a game. And when I said last week in my commentary, based on an article that we talked about, the next coup is already being planned. The first attempt was practice for the next one. This is very serious. This is not the last we've heard from this idea. Now, third and last, when does the Department of Justice get involved? Merrick Garland has been very hesitant. I can understand the reasons why he might feel that it would not maybe be good to get involved in this, but how does the DOJ justify not getting involved when every single fact is so utterly insane and dangerous? That's the question that remains, and we can't put our guard down even for a second. I have to play a video for you today that is out of this world cringe. This is giga cringe. That's what the kids call it. And it really shows us how sort of backwards, like what counts as humor is completely backwards in American right-wing culture right now. But it also shows us hypocrisy. And that's an important part of this as well. So let me set it up for you. There is a comedian, some say an comedian, and I'm completely an historian, I'm behind, and comedian, it cannot be. Comedian Jim Breuer. He has become sort of a darling of the right wing over his commentary about the pandemic, because he was on Tucker Carlson speaking out against vaccine mandates. He has moved shows around to try to circumvent vaccination requirements. We had a clip of him making a total fool out of himself on Tucker Carlson's show about a month ago. I have never found this guy funny. I used to hear him on the Howard Stern show a decade ago, 2 decades ago, and I always said, this guy's not funny. I don't know why he's on. I didn't know anything about his politics. He has become even less funny. And the material I'm about to play for you, I watched this. It gave me chills. I had chicken skin from watching this cringe. So here's a clip of Jim Breuer. And this counts as comedy for the American right wing, folks. And he's sort of doing a bird impression. Now, hold on. That could be funny, maybe. I don't know. And the bird impression is to mock people who pay attention to scientists, specialists, and doctors, rather than, I guess, right-wing media figures and quacks. And he does the bird impression while saying things like, Fauci, science. And for me, the notable part of this is there have been unfunny comedians for a long time. That's not new. The most notable part is that they pan to people in the audience. This is at one of these Reawaken America events. And people are just losing their minds, laughing, pointing, laughing. They're in hysterics. Do these people not get out of their house? And so for me, that says way more about the people who like this stuff. Breuer hasn't been funny for decades, but the audience acting like this is the vanguard of comedy is amazing. So take a look at the video.
You know what a cockatoo is? A cockatoo is like, and that's what everyone's become. Little cockatoos staring at the screen.
Facts and figures, facts and figures. Dr. Fauci, Dr. Fauci. Trust the science, trust the science. Specialist, specialist, numbers going up, one mask, two masks, fascinated, double
Yeah, so the, and I apologize for showing that to you. The crowd just has never seen anything this funny. This is, again, it's the Reawaken America tour. It's a right-wing tour. It's like a circus. It goes around the country. And it's a combination of anti-vax, COVID denial, I guess Christianity, and conspiracy theories. That's what it is. And so there's a bunch of stuff here. The hysterical crowd pointing and laughing, like it's just so, it's we've never seen anything this funny. Do these people literally not leave their houses? Like, are you just watching paint dry all day that this is what makes you laugh? It's very, very strange. Or are you just so desperate for something pretending to be comedy that makes fun of the left to be funny, that you are willing to laugh at anything? And then here's the hypocrisy, and I want to make sure everybody understands this. Jim Breuer laughed at science, specialists, numbers going up, following data. When Jim Brewer's wife was sick with cancer, he went on the radio and he was asked about it. I don't remember if it was Opie and Anthony or one of those shows. And he said, we are going to the best specialist. I mean, he used the word. In this clip, he laughs at listening to specialists because it's COVID. When his wife was sick, he went to specialists and he said, we're finding the best specialists. We're looking at the research and the double-blind placebo-controlled trials, which we are now dismissing when it comes to COVID. We are looking at clinical trials. We are following the science. When it came down to his wife, he wasn't doing this act. He was going to the exact professionals and trusting the exact system that he now ridicules. You can find that segment if you look for it. SiriusXM is very litigious with copyright, but you can find that segment. So as usual, disgusting value, going out there and saying, specialist, Fauci. But he doesn't even really appear to adhere to those very values when the rubber meets the road. Gross, and by the way, the right still can't do comedy. Nothing has changed there, folks. We'll have this clip up on our Instagram. Make sure you're following us there at David Pakman Show. We'll take a quick break and be right back. Okay, so over the weekend, there was a Fox News Channel interview. The interviewer was Laura Ingraham. The interviewee was the former president, Donald Trump. This is a very relevant interview for the next two election cycles. Now that it's clear they would try the coup again if they could, now that it's clear Donald Trump is planning to be involved in 2022 and quite plausibly in 2024, now that we know that the coup had a PowerPoint, I mean, all of this stuff, this must be taken really, really seriously. So we're going to go through a number of different lies told by Trump, but we're going to really build to the commentary about what may be coming in the future for the United States. So first, just to reintroduce us to the uncontrollable lying, Donald Trump again makes very deceptive and untrue claims about gas prices. Now, why the gas price issue is even an issue, remember, there's a lot of people who play the political football of blaming or praising presidents for high or low gas prices, depending on what is convenient based on your partisan affiliation. I don't play that game. Presidents have almost nothing to do with gas prices, but Trump plays the game. He says when he left office, gas was at $1.87, and now it's at $7.77 in California. If those numbers sound weird, they should. And let's look at the clip first.
You look at gas prices, gasoline was at $1.87 a gallon, and now in California it's over $7, $7.77 to be exact, and it's going to be catching up with a lot of other parts of the country. So,
okay, so it's all either a lie or deceptive. When Trump left office, gas was $1.87, he says. That's not true. When Trump left office, gas was $2.42. So is it higher today? Yes. But was it $1.87? No. When Trump left office, it was 30% higher at $2.42. Trump says gas is now $7.77 in California. And what's dishonest about that? Well, even if it were true that gas prices are $7.77 in California, comparing California to the national number doesn't make sense. The official national gas price is now $3.49. So you don't compare $1.87 or the real number $2.42 a year ago or when you left office to a specific gas station in California. That doesn't make sense. You compare it to the official number in the US, and that is now $3.49. It's $3.49 instead of $2.42. Is gas more now than when Trump left? Yes. It is dramatically it's a dramatically smaller gap than what Trump claimed. And remember, presidents don't control gas prices. Now, lastly, even the California number is a lie. California gas right now, the official state number is 460, not 777. Is there some gas station in California where super premium maybe was 777? Maybe. I don't know. But that's not how you look at numbers. So it's all lies. And he keeps telling them. Trump then says, and this is totally unintelligible. He's like, his brain is glitching. It's like mayonnaise or veganaise. Trump claims Democrats are going to try to use the debt ceiling for the Supreme Court and other stuff. I don't even know what he's saying. Take a listen.
to absolutely kill that. Now they're going to use it for the Supreme Court. And even worse than that, they're going to use it for the so-called voting rights, which is a disaster for our country. And certainly it's a disaster for the Republican Party.
Yeah, I don't think that's going to pass. But Arizona.
Just off the wall. Off the wall. No idea what mechanisms he is even referring to. Trump was then asked about invoking or attempting to invoke executive privilege, even though he's no longer president, over documents related to the January 6th Trump riots. And he again says there was no insurrection on January 6th. The insurrection was Election Day, November of 2020. This is his new talking point, and I'll explain it in a moment.
Ed here about the executive privilege and Biden's decision to release those documents. Your reaction tonight?
Well, we're going to have to see what happens. If you look at the protest, it was a protest. The insurrection took place on November 3rd, which was Election Day. This was a protest, and a lot of innocent people are being hurt. A lot of innocent people are being injured. I would say the panel of judges that we're talking about didn't exactly like Trump. And if you look at the appointments, you can figure that one out for yourself. But this was a absolute protest, and people are being treated very, very unfairly. Their rights are being taken away from them, and the other side is not. You take a look at what's going on with BLM and Antifa, what they did in Portland and Minneapolis and Seattle, and nothing happens. But what happened, and by the way, people were killed. Nobody was killed here other than Ashley Babbitt, who was shot violently by a man that should not have ever been allowed to pull that trigger.
Well, Liz Cheney is saying,
okay, so the story is Trump says what happened on January 6th was not a coup. It was not an insurrection. And my supporters weren't violent. It was BLM and Antifa, if anyone was violent, but otherwise it was a peaceful protest. The real insurrection was when they stole it from me, him, in November of 2020. And he also continues to insist that all of these hundreds of defendants, the rioters, were actually innocent and now are being treated poorly. It's wild. I mean, and now is where it starts to get dangerous because people believe this stuff and they're going to try it again in 2024 with Trump or with someone else. Trump then attacks the makeup of the January 6th committee and says they aren't real Republicans. It's only Kinzinger and Cheney. But why is that? Well, let's look at the clip and then I'll explain.
We have Liz Cheney and Kinzinger, two people that should not be on the committee. We don't have Republicans on I call it the unselect committee of Democrat partisans. It's ridiculous what's going on with that. And he has done a terrible job. You have I call it the infrastructure bill because it's not infrastructure.
So Trump says they don't have real Republicans. They only have people like Adam Kinzinger and Liz Cheney. Well, that's because other Republicans abandoned the initial plan for the committee and said, we're not going to participate, which made Nancy Pelosi have to go out and find Republicans willing to be on it. Does it mean we wouldn't prefer a different makeup of the committee? No, of course not. But come on, it's another deceptive claim. So here's what's very clearly going on. Trump is dramatically accelerating the pace of his media interviews over the last 2 weeks. Why? The 2022 midterms are about to start. He's ramping up for 2022. He wants to be the kingmaker. He wants people donating to him so that through his PAC, he can support candidates. He is definitely going to be involved in campaigns in 2022. And then this is all part of the buildup to try again with any means necessary, any means they can get away with in 2024. There is no doubt. Now, whether the candidate will be Trump, that's a different question. We don't know the answer to that yet. Over the last 10 days, more and more people saying it's going to be Trump. I think his health may be the biggest limiting factor. We just don't know yet. But this is building. He's doing interviews more and more frequently to sell the book, sure. But also because we are about to get very much in with what might be some of the most anticipated. I mean, it sounds cliche, but in a way, what is going to happen? Will Democrats lose everything? Other than the White House in November of 22 or not. And Trump wants to be very much involved. Okay, in the meantime, this you really have to see. This weekend in Florida was the opening night of the much promoted and hyped tour of disgraced former Fox News superhero Bill O'Reilly interviewing disgraced former President Donald Trump. It was half empty. I mean, it was a genuine embarrassment. In this picture from the opening night in Sunrise, Florida, you can see that the floor seats are about 40% empty. Then they announced before the show started, if you have cheap seats in the upper decks, we're going to close the upper decks. Come on down and sit in the lower level for free. You don't even have to pay anything extra. Sales were so terrible that tickets were available right up until the show started for $3 per ticket in many sections. Day two, not much better. We have a video of the event right before it started. And as you can see, very, very light turnout. On the way out, some hilarious interviews with people. Here's an interview with a woman who went to the event. And she said, you know, I love Trump as much as anybody, but he kind of goes off on tangents and repeats things that we already know.
Well, I thought Bill did an excellent job of trying to steer the questions that he had prepared to more of an historical nature, because it's very difficult. I love President Trump, but he can go a bit off on tangents and perhaps repeat some of the things that we all know. But Bill tried to make it a little different and make it more of a history tour.
Imagine trying to ask Trump historical questions. He knows nothing about history. He barely even understands. Like, he's been tricked into thinking certain countries that don't exist are countries. Remember when he mispronounced countries that don't exist? African countries, etc. Here's another interview with a guy leaving the show. I don't know if this was the Sunday show or the night before. He says the media covered up all of the good things Trump did, so it was good to hear it from Trump directly. You can imagine what that sounded like. And he also said it was great that Bill O'Reilly was the interviewer, because Bill O'Reilly is a centrist who doesn't take sides. Are you familiar with Bill O'Reilly, dude? Take a look.
Since he didn't have a truly fair time in office, you know, we heard more of the negative stuff on media. You know, we never heard the good stuff he was doing. And so it's really good to hear from a person like Bill O'Reilly, who was very middle of the row. He didn't, like, pick sides.
Is this guy really unaware? I mean, he looks young. Maybe he really doesn't know that Bill O'Reilly was, for a time, the most prominent conservative on Fox News. He ultimately lost his show. Sexual harassment allegations, all sorts of horrible stuff. But for like 20 years or 18 years, he was the top conservative voice of Fox News and was considered up there with Rush Limbaugh. Doesn't take sides. I mean, it's just a fantasy world. So what can we read into the lack of turnout? I would read very little into it, quite frankly. I think the reason that a lot of people didn't go to this show is, number one, early on, even cheap seats were selling for $100. A lot of people just don't have that kind of money to go sit in the nosebleeds and listen to Trump talk to Bill O'Reilly. So I think the early pricing was a factor. Two, you can love Trump and hate Democrats and plan to vote for Trump and just be tired of hearing the same nonsense from him over and over again. So the very same people who might just get bored at his rallies, we cover Trump's rallies when he did them. And even the people on the stage were bored. You would have a guy checking his phone, tapping his wife, clearly saying, can we go? Some people would fall asleep. Others would just leave. You can be bored by that. They're still voting for Trump at the end of the day. So I don't think the lack of turnout is a sign that we can safely look away from the threat of what might happen in 22 and 24 and say, we don't have to worry about these Trumpians. I think we do. But it's also really boring to listen to Trump repeat the same thing hour after hour after hour. I think that's as far as I would go in reading into this. So I have some genuinely great news for you today. You know, most of the stories that we have when you do news and politics are unfortunately stories of people doing things we don't want, bad things happen, things we have to resist. But here's a good story, something that we should welcome. And I'm doing this story knowing it's not going to get a lot of clicks. Not that many people care about it, because I care about it. I think that this is good. The Latino Civil Rights Organization, the League of United Latin American Citizens, has officially dropped Latinx as a gender-neutral term for referring to Latino or Hispanic individuals, of which I am one. And the organization's president, Domingo Garcia, sent out an email last week saying, we are stopping the use of Latinx in all communication. It's very unliked by most Latinos. And of course, that's a factor. That's something that certainly should be considered. Now, there are a ton of organizations still using it, but one organization saying we're not going to use it anymore is a good thing. And I've been against this term for a while. When people have asked about it, I've mentioned it anecdotally, but I've not really done a segment about it. As many of you know, I'm from Argentina, grew up speaking Spanish. My mom teaches Spanish literature and language at the college level, has for decades. With my family being from Argentina and politically involved, as you can imagine, this idea of Latinx, particularly in the United States, is something that I've been involved in, you know, a dozen hours or more of discussion about over the years. I have been opposed to this term for a number of reasons. Now, first of all, Spanish is different than English, and it really makes no grammatical sense. Now, I know many, but wait, David, hold on a second, sir. Some people say referring to a trans person as they makes no grammatical sense. If it's the right thing to do, then it's the right thing to do. Okay. First of all, they singular actually makes plenty of sense if you look at the history of the English language. People actually use it even today all the time without even realizing they're using they to refer to one person. Latinx is a completely different category, but it's not wrong that one could argue, even if it makes no grammatical sense, we might say, for reasons of justice and equity, let's make it part of the language if you want. Okay, we go to the next issue. The problem with Latinx is that it did not stem from a desire from within the global Latino community to change language to be more gender inclusive or gender neutral. Latinx was pushed primarily by non-Latino people. The origins aren't 100% clear. It might have been academic in origin. It might have come from the feminist community. There were a number of professors in the U.S. who at one point argued for changing the term Chicano to Chicanx rather than Chicano, Chicana, Chicanx. And at the same time, there might have been some people who said, let's do the same thing with Latinx. But the point is, it was mostly embraced by non-Latino people. And in survey after survey, almost no Latino folks actually used the term or preferred it, and many didn't even know what it was. I once hosted an awards show for a Latino organization, and on the scripts they sent me for introducing different awards, it said Latinx. And I said, listen, guys, I don't speak that way. My audience knows I don't speak that way. It's going to be very obviously not genuine if all of a sudden I'm saying Latinx. And they said, okay, don't use it. And the ease with which they just said, don't use it, signaled to me, this may be going out at some point soon. So the point here isn't language can't change over time. Of course it can. We don't use the R word as an insult. I mean, listen, there are people that do, but I cringe when I hear someone use the R word as an insult. We don't call people, or I don't, the F word as an insult, at least many of us don't. We don't say, or I don't, that's gay when I want to say something is bad. And that has sort of removed itself from the culture because the culture is what changed, not because it was suddenly said the word is done. There, of course, have been attempts to say in a school setting or whatever, we don't use this word or we don't use that word or here's the word that you use. But that's fundamentally my real issue with Latinx. This was not a cultural movement from within whose natural conclusion was, let's use the term Latinx rather than Latino or Latina. It was from above, let's just change the language and then we'll fix the other stuff that comes with it. And of course, we can deal with the issues of gender inequality within the Latino community, et cetera, without having to come in and say, this is now the word that is being used. So I like that it was dropped in this case. I think it's a good thing. I hope it goes away completely. I'm going to continue not using the word while I fight and argue for all of the very things that the word's imposition was theoretically supposed to push. Let me know your thoughts if you have them. I know for a lot of people, this is like not even really an issue at all.
It's just not something you think about, something that's not, it's not even in sort of the discussion for lots of folks, something I've been following for a while and glad to see the decision, quite frankly. We have another one of these stories of what at this point, I mean, I don't know if we just have to call this finding out the hard way. Another anti-vaccine Republican, this one in particular, was pushing the big lie that Donald Trump actually won the 2020 election, but it was stolen by Joe Biden. I mean, it's like exhausting to even repeat it at this point. A local Michigan Republican official reports the Daily Beast, who refused to certify Joe Biden's presidential victory in his county and who very much opposed vaccines, has died of COVID-19. This was 63-year-old William Hartman. He, we now found out, died on November 30th in a hospital in Michigan. He would regularly spread lies and conspiracy theories about the election on, of course, his Facebook page. And a fellow Republican on the Wayne County Board of Canvassers initially declined to certify the tallies of the 2020 presidential election votes after they come in. And Hartman agreed with that and tried also to prevent their certification. And ultimately, they did certify the vote counts. Then they said, we're going to take back our certification. Some of you may remember, like we talked about this in Michigan, where there was a certification and then they wanted to take it back, but it was too late, on and on and on. This same guy, William Hartman, said on Facebook that vaccine passports resemble Nazi Germany's draconian laws. And he has continued with this incredible string of completely bonkers COVID vaccine denial and conspiracy theories and other things. And he ended up in the hospital with the virus, and he has subsequently died. We learned that he was in the ICU with pneumonia. And on and on and on. So at this point, are these stories unique? They are not. Is this, at the end of the day, finding out the hard way? We knew what to do. We knew how to do it. The vaccine was free to him, and he didn't get it. Now, with any individual case, and this is always the important thing, you will have people who will come back and say, but David, can you say for sure that if this particular individual had been vaccinated, he would have survived? And of course not. Nobody is saying that. What we do know is that being vaccinated dramatically reduces the odds that you end up very, very sick or dying. And at a population level, not necessarily William Hartman, but at the population level, we know what there is to do. And part of this, you know, I hesitate to use this term, but there's a very specific way in which it makes sense. These unvaccinated COVID deaths, when these are just choices not to get vaccinated, often because of false beliefs about the vaccine, these are wasted, these are pointless deaths. And what I mean by that is, if you didn't do the simple thing that would likely prevent you from dying, not guaranteed, but likely, you didn't do it, then it's very stupid to die in this way, in the sense that just getting a free vaccine might have kept you alive. Now, of course, there are people who do all of the things that are available. They follow various guidelines, they get vaccinated, and sadly, they still get sick and die. Colin Powell is one of them. That's a different situation. And of course, because we know that that will happen to some people, why would we want to add on to that by tempting fate, by saying, I'm not going to go and get vaccinated? It makes no sense. In that particular sense, it's a dumb death. And it doesn't mean that getting COVID is feminine, the way Tucker said. It just means if you've not done the basics, which are free, to give yourself a better shot at staying alive if you get this disease, then you're sort of learning the hard way. Now, the last thing, and I've said this before, I'll say it again. This is not merely a self-resolving problem we can look away from. What I mean by that is, as we've said before, if this is just as simple as only the unvaccinated will die as a result of them not getting vaccinated, we could look away and say it's sad, but at the end of the day, it's your own funeral. But it's a contagious disease, and we don't know how many people did William Hartman infect. Maybe some were too young to get vaccinated. Maybe some were vaccinated but were very sick. So in getting COVID and dying, how many other people might he have taken down with him? And of course, we don't know the answer, but that's the reason why we can't simply look away and say, well, who cares if anyone gets vaccinated? I did, and I'm now protected, and it's as simple as that. It is a communicable disease, and the behavior of these people affects others as well. So tack another one onto the list, notable anti-vax Republican, pushed vaccine conspiracies, pushed election conspiracies, now dead of COVID. Speaking of dying of COVID, in today's voicemail, we have an interesting question about that. Our voicemail number is 219-2-DAVID-P. You can call any time of day, really any, if you want to call at 4 a.m., go ahead and do it. Here's a caller asking, you know, now that we know how sick Trump was of COVID, what if Trump had died of COVID?
Hey, David, I just had a question and want to get your insight on something. So as we now know, Trump almost died of COVID about a month before the election around.
Yeah, he was very sick. I don't know if he almost died, but he was very, very sick.
Early October of 2020. I wanted to know, what do you think would have been the fallout from that, given the rampancy of conspiracy theories now? Do you think that there would have been these countless conspiracies about how the deep state got him just before the election? And do you think there would have been any sort of violent protests or riots, anything like that? I would love to get your insight. Thank you.
All of the above. All of the above. I mean, listen, guys, if Trump had died of COVID, was it even a month, 3 weeks before the presidential election? Every conspiracy theory you can imagine and ones you can't imagine would have been out there. The obvious ones, of course. The Democrats killed him. The deep state killed him. His political opponents killed him. Dr. Fauci killed, you know, all of that stuff. But then there would have been more. So like the QAnon people would have had their own version, which probably would have been like he was about to unleash hell upon the pedophile ring that he was fighting. And so it was actually the pedophiles who killed him or targeted him with COVID, or this was a biological terror assassination. They deliberately injected him with, yes, COVID, but also poison, or anything you can imagine would have been proposed if Donald Trump had not survived COVID in October of 2020. And hard to even imagine what would have happened after that. I mean, I think just Biden would have won, quite frankly. I think it would have been pretty simple, but we don't know. We will never know because it didn't ultimately happen. We have a great bonus show for you today. Gavin Newsom in California is doing something very interesting. He is using or attempting to use the exact same framework from the Texas abortion ban to ban assault weapons in California. It's a very wild political switcheroo, which just might work. We're going to talk about it on the bonus show. Also, insulin prices, a big sort of battle line when it comes to prescription prices. Insulin prices may change dramatically if Democrats get their way. We'll explain how it relates to Build Back Better. And I'm also going to talk about Rand Paul's just completely pathetic, hypocritical relief begging. You may remember many times in the past, there's a natural disaster. There's a proposal to get money to the area, and Rand Paul votes against it. Now that a natural disaster has affected Kentucky, these tragic tornadoes that hit Kentucky and parts of Tennessee, I believe, over the weekend, now Rand Paul is saying, if Joe Biden doesn't get us all the money right away for everything, then he's doing a very bad thing. What happened, Rand? I thought you didn't want money for these things. And they're all hypocrites on this. Ted Cruz has been, I think James Inhofe, there's a whole bunch of them. So we're going to talk about that on today's bonus show. Remember that tomorrow, Tuesday, December 14th at 6 p.m. is the final David Pakman Show viewer town hall of the year. I look forward to seeing you there and on today's bonus show, which you can sign up for and get instant access to at joinpakman.
Yo, what's up? How y'all doing out there in techno land? RCT techno DJs in the house. Oh yeah, bringing you the only fat beats in Pittsburgh, right here on WRCT Pittsburgh 88.3 FM. Word to your mother.
those of you concerned with your health and the new USDA organic product standards, WRCT Pittsburgh would like to inform you that all our DJs are genetically modified to bring you best music.
Nuclear Holocaust. It's a very serious problem, and one that faces all of us. Fortunately, here at WRCT Pittsburgh, we broadcast from a steel-reinforced concrete basement. So we'll be playing music long after your sorry corpse has evaporated in a blinding flash of light and heat. I hope this thought comforts you. WRCT Pittsburgh, 88.3 FM. Now and forever.
Hey there, folks. Glad you could join me for all the best, the smoothest of the smooth, the cool and gentle sounds of what we call, jazz.
Tired of the fluffy stuff? At WRCT Pittsburgh, jazz is a once in a war.
My fellow Americans, I would just like to say now, as an expert on the subject, that WRCT Pittsburgh does not blow. Thank you.
WRCT, in sound, from way out.
USDA organic product standards, WRCT Pittsburgh would like to inform you that all our DJs are genetically modified to bring you best music.
Would you like to take the sounds of your favorite radio station to places you never thought possible? Well, now you can, because WRCT is live on the internet. Just point your browser to www.wrct.org and click on our live MP3 broadcast. Now you can go out of town without any feelings of loss or regret for leaving us behind, because we're just a mouse click away. WRCT, live on the internet. Because why should Pittsburgh have all the fun?
Nuclear Holocaust. It's a very serious problem, and one that faces all of us. Fortunately, here at WRCT Pittsburgh, we broadcast from a steel-reinforced concrete basement. So we'll be playing music long after your sorry corpse has evaporated in a blinding flash of light and heat. I hope this thought comforts you. WRCT Pittsburgh, 88.3 FM.
Yo, what's up? How y'all doing out there in Technoland? RCT Techno DJs in the house. Oh yeah, bringing you the only fat beats in.
From New York, this is Democracy Now! Yeah. Workers at the Elmwood Starbucks store in Buffalo, New York, won a historic victory after they voted to unionize last week, making them the first to do so among the coffee chain's 9,000 locations in the United States. More stores have already filed to unionize in Boston. We'll speak with a Starbucks barista in Buffalo and go to Memphis to talk with one of 1,400 Kellogg's workers who've now been on strike for over 2 months.
My name is Kevin Bradshaw, Vice President of Memphis 252G here in Memphis, Tennessee. I'm on strike with other workers, 1,400 workers across the United States in Omaha, Lancaster, Battle Creek, and Memphis. And we're fighting against the Kellogg Company for equal pay and equal benefits and also job security. We've been on strike now for almost 2 months, and we're trying to make sure that all future workers and current workers have the same amount of pay and benefits and job security going forward in the future.
This comes as President Biden's condemned Kellogg's plans to permanently replace striking workers. We'll look at the wave of union drives and labor organizing with historian Nelson Lichtenstein, author of State of the Union, A Century of American Labor. But first, a shocking Yahoo News expose reveals a secretive Customs and Border Protection unit investigated as many as 20 journalists and their contacts by using government databases intended to track terrorists. Those investigated include the Pulitzer Prize-winning Associated Press reporter Martha Mendoza, along with others at the Huffington Post, the Wall Street Journal, and the New York Times. We'll speak with the reporter who broke the story headlined Operation Whistlepig inside the secret CBP unit with no rules that investigates Americans.
It was so acceptable. Everything Rambo did was under orders and, you know, assigned and directed and rewarded by the highest levels of CBP.
All that and more coming up. Welcome to Democracy Now!, democracynow.org, the War and Peace Report. I'm Amy Goodman. The death toll from the unprecedented weekend storms across the United States has risen to 90, with dozens still missing. In Kentucky, workers at the Mayfield Consumer Products Candle Factory, who survived the storm, said supervisors threatened to fire them if they left their shifts early Friday, even as forecasters warned of approaching tornadoes and warning sirens could be heard. Some of the workers left the factory ahead of the storm, despite the threat to their livelihoods. At least eight people who remained died as a tornado ripped through the building and largely flattened it. More than 100 workers were trapped. Climate scientists say the rare December tornadoes are likely a result of the climate crisis. This is meteorologist Jeff Masters.
We've got a warmer climate, and that means you can get a tornado any time of year. And so you've got to be prepared. Anywhere you live in the Midwest U.S., Southeast U.S., you can get a tornado in December, January, February. We've been seeing an increasing number of these off-season storms. So tornado season's all season long now, all year long.
Climate scientists are sounding the alarm over newly discovered weaknesses in the ice shelf holding back one of Antarctica's most dangerous glaciers. The Washington Post reports the shelf appears poised to shatter within the next 3 to 5 years. Once the shelf collapses, ice from the Vasthwaite's glacier will flow more easily into the ocean, raising global sea levels. A complete collapse of the glacier could result in several feet of sea level rise, inundating coastal communities home to hundreds of millions of people around the world. COVID-19 cases continue to surge in the United States, Europe, and South Africa, where the fast-spreading Omicron variant was first detected. On Tuesday, South Africa's largest private health insurer reported Omicron appears to be substantially more contagious than even the Delta.